Hello and welcome. My name is Nathan Matheson. I am a realtor with John L. Scott, and I am thrilled to welcome you all to the inaugural episode of my podcast, RE Radar. What's my goal of this podcast? To become your trusted guide through the complexities of real estate. RE Radar, I hope, becomes your one-stop shop for buyers, for sellers, and really for just anyone captivated by the interesting nature of real estate, because real estate is interesting. It is an industry full of unique deals left and right. Everything is different because every house is different. So if you're looking to buy, if you're looking to sell, or if you just are curious about real estate, I believe this can be a great podcast for you. Now, things that I'll be doing here on RE Radar is trying to go beyond the basics. At times on RE Radar, I'm going to be diving into real life scenarios that happened in real estate transactions. And then I'm going to be kind of analyzing them and trying to figure out what went wrong, what could have been changed, and those type of things. Trying to help you all learn from others' mistakes to then make yourself better. Now, not only will I be doing solo episodes, I will also be doing episodes with guests. So some of the times I'll have on maybe another real estate broker, could be a mortgage lender, could be an inspector, could be, there's so many different fields within the real estate industry that it's not just brokers. There's so many moving pieces that are required in order to make these deals work. And I want to bring those experts here to inform you all. Now, RE's Radar's mission is just to be the beacon of knowledge in the real estate realm. With these diverse range of topics that I'll be covering, those interviews, I'll be doing case studies, market analyses, Q&As with listeners, just RE Radar promises to be your ultimate educational resource for all things real estate. Now, for this first episode, let's just jump right into it. On this inaugural episode, I'm going to be starting off with those common questions people often will have when looking at real estate. And I'm going to be trying to do at least one question, more likely two questions every single episode, because I think they're extremely helpful. Because if one person is wondering this, or if a lot of people are wondering this, then it's just something that will add value to this show and will help people. So for the first question I'm going to be tackling is, how do I prepare my home before I sell it? A great question, because if you're looking to sell your home, you want to know what you can do to maximize your profits, or sometimes you're not even looking to maximize your profits, but you want to know what you can do to achieve what you want. And now, the reason I led up with it like that is there's different scenarios. Every seller is different. Sometimes they actually don't always want to just maximize the most profit. Maybe they're trying to get out of the home quickly. They need to do something. Something came up. So there's different things that these people can do that people who are maximizing their profit won't do or will do, vice versa. You know what I'm saying? So every scenario is different. Now, first scenario kind of I'll be looking at is, let's say a seller doesn't have much money to put into the home, and they're kind of trying to just offload as is. Do you want to sell a home as is usually? Usually not, because often that home won't be in the best of condition. If this homeowner is trying to sell it like this, perhaps they haven't been taking the best of care with it. Now they're just in financial issues and trying to survive. So what do you do in this scenario? The homeowner can't really put any money into it. Well, I would do at least a deep clean of the house, try to clean the walls, clean the floors, clean every single aspect of this home. And then also, of course, get rid of as much clutter and get rid of as much furniture if possible. You want the home to be as clean as possible, and you want the clutter gone. You want all that junk out of the place. You want someone to be able to come in and look at this home and say, oh, okay, it's pretty nice. That's nice. I like it. I'll take it. You know what I'm saying? That's what you want. And now, if you do have a little bit of money, that the seller can spend, or perhaps the agent, then staging. I would highly recommend staging. Staging is a huge component of selling a home, so much so that I'm going to at one point try to get a stager to come on and be one of those experts that I interview, because staging is such an interesting component of selling a home, as it can truly make or break a listing. Now, according to data that I found on realtor.com, a staged home can sell on average 88% faster than an unstaged home. And in some of these scenarios, often cases, a staged home can sell for 20% more than a non-staged home. Why is this? You're probably thinking, well, it has furniture in it for myself. Why do I need to get rid of my own furniture and pay someone to bring in their own? Well, staging is more than just randomly coming in there and throwing new furniture into place. It's more than that. A stager is oftentimes a designer, and the designer is going to look at the space you have, look at your home, and they're going to plan out what pieces to use and where to put them in order to highlight the best features of your home. Now, one thing a stager is most definitely going to do is get rid of all your personal belongings. They're going to remove them and replace them with more neutral colored or modern furniture, things that don't just scream out at a person like, this is someone's clear-cut taste. Because the goal of staging is to prepare a home to appeal to the greatest amount of potential buyers. Seems self-explanatory, right? If you want your home to sell quicker, then you want as many potential buyers as possible to be interested in it. Now, often, if perhaps the seller left their personal belongings in the home, then it won't be the case, because the seller clearly designed this home to their preferences, and the seller might have bold taste. They might have unique taste for all you know. They can have tastes that the common average person won't like, and that is immediately going to close off potential buyers. That's why you want this furniture and you want the colors of all this furniture and stuff that the seller brings in to be that neutral, modern, just blends in. You want the furniture to be something anyone can come and be like, okay, yeah, like it. I like the place. The space is nice, a nice couch, nice all this. I can imagine myself living in this home. So if you can just do one thing, or I guess two things, you want to clean up the house, make it as spotless as possible, and then you want to get rid of your personal belongings, store them away, and bring in a stager to make this home as great as possible for as little as money as possible on your end. Now, let's say another scenario here. You're looking to sell the home and you have the ability to put some equity into it. You have some ability to spend some money, fix it up a bit, and get it looking even better than it currently is. Well, I would say there are about three things you should really focus on. Three kind of big pieces of a home that will, if you can update them and bring them to a newer, better condition, it can bring more buyers in and be effective. So those three things are flooring, paint, and lighting. Those three are key when preparing a house for a listing, when you want to try to net more money and the seller has the ability to put some money down in the process, in the listing process, when it's getting ready to go on market. Flooring, paint, and lighting. But then also perhaps you don't want to do a full remodel of the seller. They don't want to redo the whole kitchen, you know, update that to more modern. They just want to do some quick, easier, not too expensive, but not cheap either changes with the flooring, paint, lighting. For flooring, the reason I say flooring is because you're always seeing the floor. So let's say a seller has lived in their home for 15, 20 years and hasn't touched the floor. It's hardwood floor. It's starting to look dull. It's not too appealing. There's faded spots. Then I would highly recommend for them to refinish that hardwood, as the floor is something buyers are going to see constantly. Whenever you're in a room, you see a floor. It's always in that peripheral. and it's going to cause a buyer to, I don't know about this. It's going to make them question. And when a buyer starts questioning, then it's harder for them to buy that home because there's something in the back of their head. The floor is going to bring the rest of the value of the home down. Because when you see something ugly, it makes other things kind of uglier. Now, perhaps this isn't always the case. Sometimes flooring doesn't need to be replaced. Sometimes it's just fine if it's, you know, 3-4 years old, or carpet, 3-4 years old carpet, no need to replace that. But if the carpet's worn, old looking, stains in it, then it'd probably be best to replace it, put in a new carpet, as once again, that's what people are seeing. That's what people are walking on. And also, I guess another thing is with flooring, if the floor has been recently replaced or refinished, new carpet put in, then that's one less thing for a buyer to potentially have to spend once they buy the home. And that can, again, create more potential buyers for you. It could bring in buyers who don't have the money to do repairs following their purchase. And that's a good thing for you. As I've been saying, when you're selling a home, you want as many buyers as possible. So now, next up, we're going to talk about why I think paint is a big thing. It's along those similar lines. It's those similar lines of you're always seeing walls. Every room has walls. They're different colors sometimes. And paint can sometimes be polarizing because the seller is going to be using their own taste. Maybe a seller likes a bright yellow wall for whatever reason. Maybe they like that more dark color paint. They like those dark browns on their wall. And that's not what the average Joe is going to be like. Oh, I love that paint. You want, again, what I've been saying, as many buyers as possible. You want that walls to be those neutral colors. You want them to be less polarizing. You don't want them to pop in your face, because I'm sure everyone knows there's times when you'll walk into a room, you'll walk into a house or something, like, oh, you'll like kind of take a step back, like, oh, this is a lot, just off of the color of the walls. So if you want to have as many buyers as possible interested in your home, repaint the walls, make them those toned down, neutral colors that just blend it. Because, I mean, a paint color isn't going to sell your home, but it could stop it from selling because perhaps a buyer really likes the place, but they're like, this paint is horrible. It's so bad. And they're in a financial situation where they can't afford to get new paint. They're going to go with a different home. Or there's two homes they love. They like the paint or are fine with the paint colors in one home, and they're like a little iffy on your home. They're going to go with that other home. Now, lighting is another huge component, as lighting is going to make your home look better if the lighting is good and vice versa. If the lighting is bad, it is going to make that home look bad. It's going to be dark. It's going to be like, who wants to live in that? And it's also huge for the pictures. The lighting is huge with pictures. As everyone knows, lighting makes or break pictures. It's when you're taking a picture of yourself or whatever, you want good lighting because you want to look your best. It's same with these homes. Nowadays, in today's modern era with technology, almost everyone is going to have looked at these homes they're touring online first. That's where they're going to see them first. They're going to see them online clicking through pictures. That's what they do online. They don't read through all those descriptions, all that stuff. Yeah, they'll read it a bit, but the main thing they're looking at is pictures. And let's say those pictures were dark, no good light in it. They're instantly going to be turned off a bit by that home. Now, getting a little more specifics for bedrooms, you'll usually want around 2700 Kelvin. For the brightness, while in the living areas, you'll aim for around 3 to 3,500 Kelvin in the lights. Now, of course, this is dependent on natural light, how much a home gets, how much it doesn't get, if it's got big, wide, big, long, tall windows that just bring in all the great sunlight, nobody in front of you blocking it, then you can probably go with a little dimmer lights because that natural light will make up for it. So not only are the lights about the brightness, but it's also about the fixtures. You know, every year there's a new great light fixture that comes out. And sometimes you're like, oh, this is great. Let's buy it. Let's put it in the home. Boom. There you go. It looks great. It's amazing. Fast forward 10, 15 years, you're looking to sell your home. And that light fixture is now seen as, oh, that's so old, that's out of date, there's so much better stuff now. Well, maybe you should replace those light fixtures, put in more modern light fixtures and just things like that, things that fit the home and fit the current era of homes. So if there were really just one theme to sum all these up, it would be to direct your home to as many potential buyers as possible. A house that is high in demand will sell more quickly and for more money. Now, that about wraps up that question. And of course, if you have any more questions about that, feel free to contact me and I can help you out directly. But for the next question we'll be going over is why a home's assessed value is often different from the market value. So before I answer those questions, let's get into the definitions of these two terms. What is an assessed value? An assessed value is the dollar value assigned by a county assessor for tax purposes. A market value is the actual value of a property when placed on the open market and is then determined by buyers and sellers. So what are the differences in these two values? Well, who determines them's different? An assessor? Well, the market value is determined by the buyers and sellers. What does this mean? Well, they're doing it for different reasons again. Why is an assessor doing this? It's for tax purposes. Why is a buyer or seller doing this? Well, because they want to live in the home or they're selling the home and moving. The why is huge because a county assessor could care less about this home. They are doing thousands of these. Nowadays, with technology and all, it's an automated system that's doing a lot of this work. And an assessor is really also not looking at the home like a buyer or seller, as an assessor isn't even actually going to see the home in person. They're not going to the home. They're getting all their information from online. They're looking at the tax records. They're just looking at, you know, how many bedrooms there are, how many bathrooms, square footage. Yeah, they'll look at comps in the neighborhood, similar homes, and location is a factor, square footage. But in the most case, I mean, an assessor isn't going to be doing a very deep dive in a property, whereas a buyer most definitely will be doing that. A buyer is going to be looking at every single thing that that assessor is looking at, plus more, as a buyer is going to be going to that home. They're going to be looking at all over in it. They're going to be looking at the style of the home, different features it has, layouts of the home, open floor plan, more closed floor plan, how much gardening space it has, all these different driveway, like paved, dirt, rocks, gravel. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, a buyer is doing so much more work on a home than an assessor. So this can often change those values. An assessor isn't going to put as much into it as a buyer. That's really what it comes down to. A buyer and seller are looking at an entire home, specifically a home, the home, whereas an assessor is kind of just outside perspective, looking at the statistics of this home. Now, there's another value that often is, I guess, more important and very important, and that is the appraisal value. The appraised value is what the lenders will rely on when underwriting your loan. So it's very important, because let's say that appraised value comes in much lower than that offer the buyer had for that home. What's going to happen in this scenario? If the appraised value is for $600,000, let's say, and your offer for this home was $800,000. You're looking to get a loan for $800,000 on the home, whereas this appraised value that the lender is using to underwrite this loan is only $600,000. That's a big gap there. So what are you going to do? How can you stop this first from happening? How can you try to help this appraised value be closer to that $800,000 versus the $600,000? Really, the biggest thing, and one of the few things you can do that could make an impact, is being present when the appraiser is valuing the home. It's best if the listing agent is also there along with you as the buyer's agent, as the listing agent is obviously going to know even more about the home. They're going to know all the stuff the seller loves, and each of you guys will be able to point out these great features. You're going to point out the features, and you as the buyer's agent or as the buyer, knowing the buyer, you'll be able to point out the reasons why they valued the home at this and kind of why they offered that money. Essentially, that's what it is. You're helping the appraiser do his job by saying, you know, check out this beautiful garden they have. Check out this view they have. You're trying to make this home appear in the best light possible, exactly like the listing agent is trying to do. You're pointing out those great features. And you also just want to, you know, be friends with the appraiser. You want to be nice to them, as, you know, when you're nice to someone, they can be nice back to you. I'm not saying it can make a difference, but perhaps it can make a couple thousand different, maybe. Now, let's say, like I was saying earlier, this appraised value and your buyer's offer are not close. What can you do? If your client is in a situation where they just really, really want this home, it's like, this is my home. And the easiest solution to that then would, of course, be just pay the difference in the appraisal amount to your offer amount in cash. Sometimes that's not possible, but sometimes it is possible. If your client, your buyer, is in that financial position and they really want this home, then they can always make up that difference in cash. Another potential option for you is to request the appraiser to go back out there and check it out again. Do a new walkthrough. Maybe there is something they missed somehow. Maybe you weren't able to be with them for that first appraisal. You can request to get a second one. And if they do it, then you go out there this time. You do your job as this your client's agent, and you help try to get that value boosted. So that's really it for these value talks for now. Appraisal, assessed value, market value, three different types of values that can in some cases be different. Kind of why that is. I hope you learned about that, and I hope it helped you out. And again, like I'll be saying, if you ever need any more clarity with these questions, feel free to reach out to me. So now moving into the next topic, it is going to be the random city one. For this topic, I think it's really cool because oftentimes you're so locked into your area. Like I grew up here in the Seattle area, so I'm locked in this market. I know a lot about it, but I don't know about a market in Idaho. I don't know about the market in wherever. So just by doing this, this is something that's very interesting to me and I think is interesting to other people. Let me know if it isn't, and maybe I'll stop doing this segment. But until then, each time I'll be just selecting a random city through a website called Earth Roulette. And now if you're watching this podcast on YouTube, then you'll also actually be able to see these cities and see some images I have for them. For this episode, the random city I've ended up with is Spanish Fork, Utah. Now, Spanish Fork is in the north part of Utah, just south of Provo. And as of 2021, Spanish Fork had a population of 44,000. So it's a pretty small city, not the biggest place. It's in Utah, so it's mountainy, hilly, kind of that type of a city. And in January of 2024, the median home prices here was $474,500, according to realtor.com. That is 9.2% down from the previous year. So from January 2023, this $474,500 was 9.2% less in the median home list price. Now, the median home sold price in January 2024 was $415,300. The market here in Spanish Forks is a buyer's market. The buyers have the advantage. Median days on market is 57 for January. Now, as you see here, the median list price versus the median sale price is a decent difference. It's about a $50,000 higher median sold price. Median list price is $50,000 higher than the median sold price. Why might that be? There's a few different things. A market, what the market is will affect that. A buyer's market like this is can sometimes cause that median sold price to be a good amount lower than the median list price, as sellers don't have the advantage here. So buyers sometimes will purchase a home for lower list price, just bringing down that median sold price compared to the median list price. Now, of course, another big factor is simply the idea that less buyers can afford higher priced homes. The market for a mid-range, lower or lower range home, there's more people who can afford that than these $1.5 plus $2 million homes. So that's also going to do it, because those high priced homes will sit on the market. And so they go into the median list price data, but the median sold price, they don't get counted in that because they're sitting on the market. And just for, as this is the first episode, I'll do a little comparison from this Spanish Fork, Utah, straight up to Seattle, as the median list price in Seattle from January was $790,000, median list price $790,000, median sale price $750,000. A Seattle market is a seller's market, and as you can see, it still has about here's $40,000, that's close to $50,000. You know what I'm saying? So that median sale price is $40,000 less than the median list price. And in Seattle, even in a seller's market, that's the case, as for the reason, second reason likely. Higher priced homes sit on the market longer, less potential buyers for them. Now, let's look at an actual home in Spanish Fork, Utah for sale. Now on my screen, I have pulled up this example of a home listed in Spanish Fork, Utah. Now this is a new construction home. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, 3,600 square foot home. Its list price is $640,000. There's no HOA here. And in Seattle, this new construction home, this size, that'd be gone in an instant at that price. In Spanish Fork, Utah, where it's a buyer's market, market's not very hot, it's been sitting on the market for 235 days. That's a long time to sit on the market. And at this price, you'd think it's crazy. That's what this segment is bringing. I think it's informing people. I hope it informs you guys, just showing how markets are different all across the world. Or I guess all across the world, but I'll be focusing all across the United States. As next up in this random city, I'm going to Sugar Land, Texas. Sugar Land is right next to Houston. It's a little southwest of it. And as of 2021, Sugar Land's population was 109,373. And as they say, Texas, everyone's moving to Texas from California. Texas is the spot to be. Well, not Sugar Land. Sugar Land is actually decreasing in population. Now it's a slow rate, but still decreasing. 2020 census was 110,882. Well, 2024 is 109,074, so a 1.58% decrease. What has that done to the Sugar Land real estate? Median list price in Sugar Land this past January, 519,000, a little higher than you guys were probably expecting. Well, it also happens to be 13.1% higher than this past January. So January 2023, real estate was 13.1% less than 519,000. What is going on where you're thinking, Sugar Land, why is the prices going up? People are leaving. That's what it is. Sometimes population doesn't directly affect the whole home prices. There's a whole lot of factors that go into it. Now, again, like I said with Utah, the Utah spot, median home sold price in Sugar Land was $414,100. So that's about $105,000 less than the median home list price. Now, according to Realtor.com, Sugar Land has a sale to list price of 97.7%. So what that means is homes sold for 2.23% below list price on average this past January, making it a clear buyer's market. With a declining population, being a buyer's market makes sense. Now, the example home for Sugar Land is this 2008 4-bedroom, 3.5-bathroom, 3,688 square foot home listed for $775,000. It is a beauty. And it is also already pending. So it went pending. It was on the market for 13 days. That's a good turnaround time because the median days on market in Sugar Land from January was 33 days. So this home clearly was something that was of value and something people were looking for. Now, that is just about all the time I had. This episode's gone a little bit longer than I was shooting for. So I'm going to wrap it up here. I just want to thank you all for tuning in to the inaugural episode of RE Radar. I hope everyone who tuned in today will tune in to episode 2, which will also be just jam-packed with new information for you guys and be that resource for everyone looking to learn a little more about real estate, whether you're a buyer, first-time home buyer, second time, it doesn't matter, buyer, seller, or just already own and you're just interested in learning more. I hope you all tune in. But for now, all I got for you is adios.